Thank you for the welcome, choir. I'd like to bring us into our time of worship with these words from the late Unitarian Universalist minister, Rudolf Mimser. We have been away. We have been where waters run and paths climb hills past golden fields, where eagles soar and cattle stand in silhouette against red and purple sunset. We have been where carefree days follow one another, dewdrops along a spider's strand. The being away was very good. But it is time now for us to return. Find what we cannot find alone, safety, warmth, acceptance. Do what we cannot do by ourselves. Build, sing, hold, worship. Affirm challenges, sorrows, tasks, joy, not ours only. Time now to return where truth acknowledged we'd never left. Home. Within each of us burns a holy, sacred light. And it is with a spark from that flame that we, when we come together, kindle our common flame. This morning, our chalice will be lit by members from the music committee. And as they do that, I would like to invite you all to join in the unison words of chalice lighting written in our order of service. In a house which becomes a home, one hand down and another takes up the heritage of mind and heart, laughter and tears, musing and deeds. We light this chalice for all the generations and those who will find a home within these walls. As Scripture reminds us, when you light a lamp, no one lights the flame and puts the candle under a bushel basket, but instead puts it on a lampstand for it to give light for all to see. May the light of the flame that we kindle shine as a beacon of welcome for all who seek a spiritual home here, and as a light of love and hope, peace and justice for a troubled world. Please be seated, and I invite you to be attentive to a message from our Director of Religious Education, Michelle Cote.
All right, so today I want to talk to you about the difference between a house and a home. And this question is directed more to the younger people in here, but anyone can answer. What are some similarities about these two buildings right here? Quincy. They're both houses. How are they similar as houses? Luke, what's something the same about both of those houses?
I can identify that they're different.
Yes, one of them does have a missing door. This one's under construction. We can all relate to that here. Yeah. Anything else that's the same about them? Henry, what's one thing that's the same about them? The roofs are both blue. They both have windows. They both have floors. They're very similar. They're buildings. They're called houses. Now, here's the question. How do you know the difference? One of them is a home, and one of them is a house. How do you know the difference between a home and a house? Quincy. A home has people living in it. How else is a home different than a house? Any other ideas? Yes. A home can be anywhere. You don't have to have a house, I think what Theo's saying, to make a home. So now I'm going to ask Laura to open up her house, and we're going to look inside her house. There's a little latch right here. So just open that up. And, whoops, I'm going to hold that and pretend that didn't fall out. What's in this house? Any people, any beings? Can you hold it up high? No, it's kind of empty. Nothing going on there. All right, now I'm going to help Alex open his house. And inside there, this house, can you tell us what's in there, Alex?
People.
Okay, there's, and a little dog, because sometimes homes have dogs. So if I were to say, which one is the home, which one would you say? Laura's or Alex's? Alex's is the home because there's people. And there's one other thing that fell out, but this is an important part of a home. What is this, Laura? A heart. For people that can't see it, it's a heart. And in my opinion, you cannot have a home unless you have people and you have a heart, which is the symbol for love. Now I'm going to make it one more step. And I know those people are falling right out, so you can just put that down, Alex, now. Those people are very excited to come join us today. So if we compare our church to one of these two buildings, which one do you think is more like our church? The one that Laura had or the one that Alex had? Alex's. Because it had people and it had love. And that is what we have here. We have people that gather together and they care about each other and they love each other and they accept each other. And so welcome back to your church home. Or welcome to your church home if this is your first time here. Thank you guys for helping.
Well, welcome home. And now I mean that to apply to everyone, not to just those of you who have been coming for so many years that you're almost part of the woodwork here. I mean it to apply to everyone gathered here this morning, even and especially if you're with us for the first time. The message that this church publishes to the greater community could be simply stated as, come home. The spiritual call to come home is just as relevant, perhaps even more relevant, to those who have only gathered with us a few times, and even those who come here today for the very first time. To come home, to feel at home, can have a lot of different meanings. Of course, there's the obvious meaning of returning to the house or the apartment in which you live. Or maybe you still think of the house in which you grew up as home. So coming home can mean returning to that house. When asked where he's from, where's home, my partner Malcolm always responds, Louisville, Kentucky, even though he's not lived there for nearly 40 years. In a certain way, that will always be home to him. But from a different perspective, often the religious journey itself is described as a journey home, a journey to a place where you belong. In the great story of the book of Exodus, the Hebrew people wander for 40 years in the desert in search of one thing, their home. In the Psalms, one way of describing the holy or the sacred is as a dwelling place. For some, coming home in the religious sense is all about the afterlife, returning to God or the source of life. And more than once, I have sat with folks who were dying who got great peace from that feeling that they were going home. But that's not really what I want to talk about this morning. When I say to you, welcome home, in those beautiful words that you just heard the choir sing, words of the poet Michael Dennis Brown, they acknowledge, or he acknowledges, that he has wandered. And he asks, where is the road that will lead me home? Where's the road that will lead me home? Have you wandered, asking yourself, is there a place where my family, as we are, can call home? A place where I can really be myself and where I feel comfortable. I have, and I know that finding that place is important. It is more than important. It can be profound. It can be life-saving. As that poet writes, there is no such beauty as where you belong. This morning I'm suggesting to you that the road you can call your own, the road that will lead you home, is right here. And we walk it together, week after week. You know, there is a lot of homelessness in the world, and I'm not talking about the plight of the poor who live on the streets or in shelters. That is certainly an important topic for our faith to address, but it is a sermon for another day. There is a different kind of homelessness that even the people who live in the fine houses all around us may be experiencing. There are an awful lot of people who are spiritually homeless, theologically homeless, religiously homeless. And the world is a very restless place. As a society, we are more mobile than we've ever been in history. Work in particular requires people to move often. Few of us live in the context of a multi-generational family, which was common only a generation or two ago. Few of us stay in the community where we were raised. I find that when I ask people the question, where are you from, or where do you call home, the answers can get very long and entangled. You know, something like, when I was a child, my family lived in Town A, and we moved several times because of my dad's job, and then my parents were divorced, and my mother moved to City B, and we spent school vacations and a month in the summer with my dad, who lived in C, and then I went to college in D and got a job there, but then I was transferred to E, and my partner, who was from F, and I got married, and then my partner's job changed, and that brought us to G, and you can go through the whole alphabet with many people, and it goes on. There is not a geographical center in these lives. There's no geographical place to truly call home. The author Scott Sanders wrote a book called Making a Home in a Restless World, and in it he writes, I cannot have a spiritual center without having a geographical one. I cannot live a grounded life without being grounded in a place. And he suggests in that book that there are real consequences if we don't have an actual place to call home. Gathering, as we do, in this beautiful historical place, and now this beautiful place with its new wonderful addition and renovated space, there is a real sense of being grounded in a place. You know, over the years, we share a great deal here. Our children are christened and dedicated here. Marriages take place here. We remember and mourn our dead here. With each event, this place takes on more of the feel of a home. But it's far more than just a geographical location or a building that's required to create a spiritual home. Our spirits are restless in many ways, and we yearn to come home to much more than just a place. As important as geography may be, the home we each make is really defined by the company we keep, by the people with whom we make our home. You probably all remember that Robert Frost poem, The Death of the Hired Man, in which he says, home is the place where when you go there, they have to take you in. That may be, I think, the very minimal definition of what a home is. But it's not enough for a spiritual home. So I'd like to change in that line of poetry, the have-tos to want-tos in Frost's definition. So Robert Frost, if you forgive me for tampering with your poetry, home is the place where when you want to go there, they want to take you in. It's that kind of acceptance of you for who you are that makes our church a home. Perhaps you recall the story in Luke's Gospel of the prodigal son. Remember, there are two sons. One stayed home, did all the right things. The other took his share of what would have been his inheritance and took off. He did all the things his father didn't want him to do, lost all the money, and he begged to come home as a mere servant in his father's household. But instead, he was accepted back into the family with a great celebration, regardless of the hurt he had caused and the mistakes he had made. In a religious journey home, we are accepted for who we are, with all our issues and our weaknesses. But more than just acceptance is required for a church to be a home. We are socially conscious and active church. We do the work of love and justice together here, and it is certainly an important part of our religious calling. But there's something more simple and fundamental that's at the heart of why a church like this one can be a home for us. You know, we all know something about a home, and it is the place where we feel comfortable. Perhaps describing personal comfort as one of the most important reasons to belong to a church sounds a bit too self-indulgent for some. After all, we're not first and foremost a bunch of comfort seekers, are we? We unite around a set of high principles, and we try to live meaningful lives and help others and do the work of love and justice. That's all true. But don't miss the importance of comfort too quickly. One of my colleagues, the Reverend Jane Jepka, put it this way. Our Unitarian Universalist religion is about a great number of things. Challenge, strength, hope, community, inspiration, good works, cutting-edge theology. And it's also about comfort and well-being that is fortifying and healing. Especially at times of loss, of struggle, of questioning, of loneliness, that aspect of home as a place where you receive comfort, where you are comfortable, is essential. And I believe you can find that here. There's a third component that makes this church a home. Here, in this faith tradition, we encourage your self-actualization. Just as a good parent at home with their family encourages their children to explore new thoughts and ideas, so does this church. Community is critical to us, but so is the development of the self. Among the lessons this religious tradition has learned is that we only develop our self-understanding fully within the collective intensity of a society and a nurturing, non-judgmental environment like a home. We strive to give you both here in these walls each week. We want you here for who you are, continuing to discover your gifts, your talents, your beliefs, and not for who we can make you into. For self-development, a home like this church is critical. The writer Judith Wright put it this way. It is the experience of being at home or not being able to go home that sustains the sense of self or begins to shatter it. A church that is a real home helps us to sustain our sense of self. But sadly, not all churches can be a home. Some may offer comfort, but little acceptance of you if you are of a different race or class or sexual orientation from the majority of its members. Others may accept you as you are, but feed you a very strict regimen of what you and your children must believe. In that kind of church, there is no opportunity for self-actualization, no opportunity to explore what you truly believe. I know the experience of saying to myself, I cannot really belong to a particular church. I cannot be myself there. I cannot make my home there. I cannot be comfortable there, because if they really knew who I was, they would not want me. It may be the church you grew up in. You may be attached to it in many ways, but it just can't be your home. I know that many of you have had this kind of experience, and I know it can be a real struggle to find that true religious home. And yes, there are many who give up on that struggle altogether. They say, I don't need a church at all to find the things you describe. I can be grounded and self-actualized, accepted and comforted without a church. I can raise my children and mourn my dead and celebrate the joys of life without a religious community. Religion is just a crutch, they argue. And there was a time when that statement might anger me, but now I respond a bit differently. Perhaps in some ways religion is a crutch. But a crutch isn't a really bad thing. It's what holds you up when you cannot stand on your own. Please understand that I believe that this faith tradition is much more than just a crutch. But now I reply to those who make that sort of argument this way. Okay, perhaps religion is a crutch, but it's one of the best crutches that I know about. And then I ask them, and what crutch do you use? Finally, as every homeowner or homemaker knows, to keep the home strong and safe, to maintain it as a nurturing place, requires commitment and work. Every home, including this church home, can always use more love and care. What makes the house strong is not that it was once and forever made perfectly, but that those who call the place home are continually striving to make it a better place, to care for it. Wendell Berry wrote, "The house is a shambles unless the vision of its perfection upholds it like a stone." With all that's gone on right now here, with our wonderful building and our renovation projects, we see this vision of our spiritual home's perfection displayed in a very tangible way. And I hope we can all remain committed to keeping this church as beautiful as it is today for future generations. But our house, our religious home, is maintained by more than the physical work we do on the buildings. Our religious home is upheld by our vision of a better and more just world, a more loving and compassionate community, and a desire to reach out and welcome all who are seeking to belong to a community of both acceptance and challenges. We are not a perfect church, but I believe we are a strong church, and in large part that is due to the fact that we strive to build and rebuild a church that so many can call home. This Sunday's worship, and really every Sunday, is an invitation. It's an invitation to come home. Each week you're invited to go with us to this special place, a place where your freedom to believe as you choose is honored, a place where you can be who you are, a place where you can be nurtured and you can nurture others, a place where you can celebrate life with singing and laughter and friendship, a place where you are reminded of the values that are important to a good life and challenged to be the best you can be, a place which enlivens the spirit within you. And isn't that just what should happen in any good home? So I invite you on this in-gathering Sunday, whether you're a lifelong member of this church who attends every week, whether you haven't been here for a while and are returning, or whether this is your very first Sunday with us, to recognize that yearning, that pull of the Spirit in all of us, to come home, to a place where we find acceptance and comfort, a place to both build community and to sustain the self. My message to you is very simple this morning. It's to recognize in so many ways this place can be a home for you. And then again and again, week after week, just come home. Where is the road that you can call your own, as the poet wrote? The road that will lead you home. I believe it can be right here.